Hello, this is Property Matters, a weekly catch-up on the world of property, supported by Fairview International Property Consultancy and auctionproperty.co.uk. We're live every Sunday, 10 a.m, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and our website, propertymatterstv.co.uk. And if you're watching on our website, leave us a Google review and get involved in the conversation in the comments section below. If you can't get hold of us on a Sunday, you can get us on a podcast. On Mondays at 10 a.m, we release the Sunday programme as an audio version for you to listen to from the podcast platforms over there on the other side of the screen. And we're live on Deal Say Radio across the week too. Let's say hi to our property expert, Joe Joshi. Hi, Joe.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Paul. Good morning to all our viewers and listeners on a lovely Sunday morning.
Super. Let's have a look at our first story, and we can't really ignore this one. And it's a relatively quiet week in property this week, if I'm honest. But this is famous for being a story about no news, because Bank of England basically left the interest rate at 5.25% for the sixth time. The decision came as inflation, which measures prices across time, remains above the bank's 2% target at 3.2%. As well as the interest rate decision, the bank has just released its latest forecast estimating what will happen to inflation in the UK economy. Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey believes that it's not yet the time to cut rates. He says that he needs it to see more evidence that price rises have slowed further before cutting interest rates. He said he was optimistic that things are moving in the right direction, with the bank expecting inflation to fall close to its 2% target in the next couple of months. We need to see more evidence that inflation stays low so that we can cut interest rates at that point. Bank of England policymakers were not unanimous in holding rates at 5.25%. The 9-member panel that decides rates saw 7 vote for a hold and 2 for a cut. So that's one more vote for an immediate cut compared to the last decision. So the markets are fully pricing in a cut in September, but many economists think the bank will make a move sooner than that to cut rates. And there are a lot of people talking about June, Joe. And of course, the impact of this on property market is that people are still hanging on waiting, aren't they, at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really surprised that the Bank of England has kept it at 5.25. I always thought that the only time that they may consider bringing it down are two points. One is obviously if the inflation comes down. And secondly is that when the election is about to be announced, it will be a motivator for people to consider what the Conservatives have done in their history and how they've turned the inflation down and brought it down. And of course, that would then have a knock-on effect. So it would be probably more of a marketing ploy than actually the real reason for where it's going to be. We've talked about this a million times on here, and I still feel that the new norm is going to be 5% probably, or thereabouts. The 5.25 was a little bit tipped over, and the chances are that they'll use that as the sort of indicator to say things are getting better, which is what Andrew is saying. That he says that, you know, he can see improvement, but at the same time he can see that if it comes closer to their target of 2%, they're likely to consider bringing the interest rate down, probably from 5.25% to 5% itself. I mean, they might even bring it back in smaller portions. You don't know. It doesn't have to be in quarters. It could be that they might bring it back down as a point, you know, 2% or something like that, and then sort of bring it down again to show where it's going to be. And every point will make a difference in the marketplace. Where does that leave with the housing market? Well, in all honesty, the housing market, to a large extent, is pretty much at a stalemate. It's not shifting either way. They are hopeful. I think people are just cautious, I suppose, is probably the right word at the moment. Cautious to think that they've got some fixed rates and they want to sort of time that into the fixed rate and hope that the rates come down. So when they are moving, they might get a better fixed rate on the next purchase or a remortgage that might allow them to have a better fixed rate. And of course, as we know from last week, from the Zoopla report, there's more stock available, but not necessarily shifting, only because it has to be priced right to shift. So the overall view is probably stalemate at this moment in time. And we've been here before. many times where that uncertainty means that people tend to sit on their hands. It is a buyer's market. Of course, there are opportunities for buyers. Equally, from buyer's point of view, there is challenges in securing the right lending.
Yeah, they're saying that the next meeting on the 21st of June is the possibility of a bank rate cut. And the reason for that is they'll have had two sets of figures on inflation in wages by then. So it really is a no news is good news approach. And that was kind of what most people thought was going to happen. But I did read something very interesting, and I'll read it to you here. It says, whilst holding the base rate provides stability to the wider economic environment, the sector remains fragile, talking about property, of course. Fall through rates are high and news of mortgage rates increases are not giving any comfort for buyers or sellers. We're seeing more activity in the market than we were in 12 months ago, and this is partly down to rising payments as mortgage terms come to an end, pushing many to sell. Sensible pricing remains the key determinant for vendors who are looking to sell quickly. They've also seen a 30% increase in the number of sellers using online auctions. As there's some are desperate to seek speed and certainty in their transaction. So, of course, what we haven't really discussed recently, although we've discussed it in the past, is that there are still people coming to the end of their low rate fixes that they've had for 5 and 3 years, where they would have been sub 2%. So there's still people coming out to the market. I think they were probably hanging on thinking, my God, I hope they come back down again into the fours or even into the threes by the time I need to remortgage or come out of my deal. And of course they're not, they're still at 5.25. And of course that's made the house unaffordable for many.
That's right, that's exactly the point I was making earlier on, that there is a number of people that are literally on the brink of coming out of their previous very low, very competitive fixed rates. And those are now creating a decision pattern for them. As you rightly say, they were hoping that either the interest rates would have subsided by now from the 5.25, perhaps down to 4.5 and perhaps less, so that they could renegotiate a new fixed rate at a lower new rate. However, it seems that that is going to be a long story. And even if it happens in June or in September, some of those rates would have expired, and so people are having to make decisions. Now, it makes a lot of difference, Paul, in terms of payments every month. I mean, we looked at those payment structures for the average house price in London last week when we talked about the Zoubla report, and some of those are, you know, anything between £2,000 and £7,000 a month difference, and it all depends on what the level of borrowing is going to be. So people are at a quarter, like maybe a quarter percent above base, or even just, maybe 2% or 1% above base was a good rate to be fixed at. But that holiday period is over. And now it's the case of saying, well, what do I do? And really, it is that the rates are so expensive that it is motivating people to say, well, I need to get out of this sooner rather than later. You touched on the subject of auction. Now, auction is a method of sale that provides speed and efficiency in order to be able to get someone to move their property fairly quick. Of course, it has to be price motivated in order for people to do that. And having discussed the conversation with a number of agents recently, they are all struggling because their properties that they have on their books, the vendors are not in a position to consider price reductions in order to be able to accommodate what they may have borrowed. Now, that might have been later borrowers, but the older borrowers may have the concession to drop the prices. So it's a real sort of price-driven, motivated through the method of auction and perhaps mortgage-driven at the moment. And those are all the driver factors of what makes people want to think, well, do I stay or do I go?
Property Mark's own Housing Insight report discovered that there's been a 4% increase in the number of potential buyers registered and an 8% increase in the number of available properties to rent, which shows that there's some reasons to remain optimistic that the housing market is recovering from the shock economic factors from the last 3 years. But I do sense that there is a number of people that are thinking, well, rates aren't going to be going up anymore anytime soon. It's pretty much established that. So you know, if I'm looking for a house now, it's going to be probably 3-4 months before I move in. So by that time, rates should be palatable. So there's definitely a sense of people hanging on the edge, waiting for that moment to drop.
Yes. And, you know, if I go back in history, if you actually had a penny for every or a pound for every person that was waiting for certain things to happen, and then the opposite happened, they then sit there and think, you know, I wish I'd done this 3 months ago, 2 months ago. My advice to anybody would be that if it's right for you now, do it now. Yes, it's going to be a little bit expensive. It might be fixed for the next 2-3 years, but you know what that's going to be because you know what the rate's going to be. And if it's going to come down, it'll only be a plus. We, as you rightly say, get a clear indication from the Bank of England that they're not looking to increase rates at this moment in time, considering the inflation has dropped closer to 3%. And obviously, if you can get it closer to 2%, the likelihood of the interest rates dropping is higher. Perhaps only by 0.25%, but it's certainly higher. And there's lesser chance of it actually going north. So if you can fix, and there are fixable rates out there at sort of 4, 4.25, 4.5%, depending on the percentage you borrow and subject to status, of course, of each person's circumstances. So if you can get in on the property ladder, I always encourage people that now is as good a time as any to do that. It's certainly a buyer's market. You probably have that change out of perhaps a negotiation on the purchase price. And so you've got to encounter that, you know, encompass that into your whole calculation. So, well, okay, I might have been paying hypothetically £550,000 for a property, but now I might pay £525,000. So it's a £25,000 reduction plus obviously the rate plus the time. So there's an overall gain. But of course, you know, you've got to be in a position to be able to strike.
Do you think there's a sweet spot, Joe, you know, somewhere around, say, 4%? Because the trouble with it getting back to sort of the levels of 2%, the savers are going to get nothing. Yes, you get a nice cheap mortgage, but those who've got savings, and you could argue that because savings weren't delivering anything at all for the last 15 years, and that's, you know, we've got the highest rates now for the last 15 years, and when they've been at that rate since last August. But when we had low rates, it almost forced people to get into the buy-to-let market and become accidental landlords, or, you know, small person, one property landlords. And that wasn't particularly great for the market necessarily. The government seems to doesn't want that. So is there a sort of sweet spot where savers earn a bit, say 4%, and mortgages are palatable, shall we say?
Yeah, I would think the sweet spot is probably around 4-4.5%. Which obviously gives savers a comfortable scenario. So let's just do the numbers for the purpose of the exercise here. You know, at one time, the borrowers could lend, borrow money at sort of a 0.25%, maybe 1.5% above base or give or take. So that was great for them. But savers were getting almost zilch on their money. It wasn't even worth sitting in the bank. So of course, that encouraged them to become, as we know it, as accidental landlords. They'd rather go and buy something, think that I'll do that. But they really didn't like that because it meant so many people trying to do the same thing. First-time buyers lost out because investors were buying. And so they took those properties that the first-time buyers maybe could have bought off the market. So now, it's almost worth not buying a property for as an investment, primarily because, you know, if you put your money into a fixed rate with a reasonable builder's society, you're probably going to get anything between 5-7% fixed over a period. And so the argument is, well, what's the point? Why, you know, so when I get investment properties come on the market and people say, well, I need to buy X, they've got to show a return nowadays somewhere between 10-12%. Gross, so it can be net down to maybe 8%, 10%, because the borrowing is 5.25 plus maybe 2 by any bank or lending institution. So, you know, they've got to cover a 7.5, almost sometimes 8%. So it's not an investment anymore. You may as well not have it. So it's a real, real fine line. So I think the sweet spot, as you say, it would be probably around 4.5%, which gives enough for people that are investing and saving, but equally, and so those will might be actually get maybe get 5% from a fixed rate, which is a good return. And it means that it's a bit more palatable and affordable for mortgage borrowers, is probably where it's going to be. So that's why when you get a fixed rate offer nowadays around sort of between 4 and 4.5%, it's a doable rate, and it's a rate that people are happy to lock themselves into.
Did see one piece of useful advice for those who are about to remortgage very soon. It says it's worth knowing that some lenders will charge you for sending someone out to value your property. If you then find a different lender offering better rates after, say, a potential Bank of England rate cut, you won't get a refund for that original valuation, leaving you out of pocket. So if you're playing the waiting game and waiting to see what interest rates are going to do over the next few months, be aware that not all lenders will charge you a valuation fee. So speak to a mortgage broker who can point you in the direction of a lender who offers a free valuation. Interesting point.
In all honesty, there's no such thing as a free lunch, Paul. Free is the idea of that is a hook to invite you to come in and borrow money from that particular lender. When you look at the overall return that they are looking at, it's absolutely a notional amount which will be added somewhere in administration costs. I think that's a bit of a fallacy that people say, oh, something's free. There's nothing in life is free. There's always a price to pay somewhere. Yes, but so the cautiousness there is to perhaps wait and make sure that you get the right lender and the right product, and then spend your money on the survey, because survey costs are they can be quite extortionate if you're doing it too often. So let's say you did three or four lenders, different types, you could end up paying 3,000 or 4,000 pounds, almost £1,000 a pop. And even if they said, oh, we'll do that for free for you, I guarantee you that somewhere in that mortgage offer, there will be a charge for some administration, some arrangement fee, something like that. And basically, they would have added that upfront money back in the system. So you will pay for it. It's just that you're not paying for it upfront.
Let's move on to our second story. We never talked about this, actually. New research from Rightmove shows that Victorian homes are the most searched for a period property style. Rightmove's keyword search tool shows the wider popularity of historic and unique properties with character and period ranking in the top 20 most searched for keywords in Property Criteria this year. Georgian properties are the second most searched for style, while the third most popular is Edwardian, followed by Tudor in fourth and Regency homes in fifth. Rightmove says home hunters continue to be captivated by the character and charm of properties that we see in period dramas, for example. Victorian homes remain particularly popular, characterized by their historic charm, solid construction, and spacious interiors. You'll often find Victorian houses in some of the most desirable locations, which include convenient access to schools and transport links. So you've got Victorian, then Georgian, Edwardian, Tudor, and Regency. Which would you choose, Joe?
Well, it's about personal taste, really, isn't it? Of what you like, or what appeals to your eye, and more than anything else, the environment that it's set in. So, any and all of the above could be right, depending on where it is and how that village or that town's approach was set in those times. And yes, we may not have covered this, but I've always said that people that want to have families and expand their families, the older properties offered much more versatility than the modern properties that are being built today. There is no space around them at all, and so they build to max. In the times when Victorian properties were built, they were built, whether they were terraced houses or ender terraced or whatever, they all had some features about them that allowed them scope to extend perhaps across the back, maybe as time goes on, perhaps into the loft space, and even to be able to divide or not divide the downstairs living accommodation. You may remember there was a time when you had perfectly good lounge, dining room, and kitchen, and then this world of modernism came in and said, let's knock the wall out in the middle and open it up as a through lounge. And then you had this problem of the whole room. Obviously, it made it much bigger, but the problem was now you didn't have the two separate rooms, and so there was no breakout room. I remember obviously when we had our parents' house, they would have a lounge which was always theoretically locked up for the guests that may arrive, and then we were all around in the other rooms and so forth. But then later on, either doors were put in the middle, sliding doors to block that off and open it up to make it easier, or an archway, or just the wall was taken out to make it a through lounge. Those facilities were good because they had good size. Accommodation size was pretty good. Naturally, the look was more attractive because there were some period features about each of those periods that we talk about that made them attractive. And people like different things, like the Tudor, like the Regency, like the Victorian type of property that people like to see. The other thing was that they had a lot of space around them. And they had good sized gardens and perhaps scope to extend to the side or nice gardens to the front. But because the car became the most important thing, most fronts were now concreted over and made parking spaces. So they now look probably ugly and tatty as opposed to being attractive and characterful as time has gone on. It's a real shame. But yes, the reality is that the older properties had more space, more character, and more versatility. In
terms of doing those alterations and things that you talk about, Joe, would you say it's more difficult to amend a Victorian property? I mean, because they're properly constructed. So, but you know, with a modern house, it's just, you know, plasterboard and simple changes.
Well, we say that, but even with a plasterboard and simple houses, it's not just about the plasterboard, it's about where those plasterboards are going to be linked. So you might find that a main wall is creating a problem, and so therefore you might have to put in new RSJs, new steels to support the upper parts. They weren't designed that way because they were designed not to be dismantled. Whereas the Victorian or the older properties were much, much more solid. If you did take a wall out in the middle of it, it had good support still on the sides to be able to support the upper parts. Then you put maybe an RSJ or some sort of steel across it to be able to provide the extra support. I think the older properties were just a little bit more, though they were solid, they were more confident, I suppose, in the change that you could make. Whereas the modern properties are, as you rightly say, are mostly stud partitions of some sort. You can knock them out, change them around, and do what you like. But I don't think there is enough space that allows that, and you really got to think about how you're going to do that.
And lastly, of course, they come with their problems. You know, they're 150, 100 years old, depending on which one you're choosing, even older in some cases. And so they come with challenges where the roof and the windows and that kind of thing are concerned.
Yes and no. Again, if you've got a listed building, which is obviously listed for a reason, then of course those windows and roofs and the exterior become a challenge. But if they are not listed, then you can modernize them, but by keeping some element of the character within that modernization. So the advent of Georgian double glazed windows, I remember, with the crisscrosses and the leaded light windows. I remember a particular builder that was almost recognized for that. Charles Church was building lots and lots of houses with these leaded light windows and darker frames. And, that was a good character. He was trying to build on the character of in some cases, Georgian style, in some cases, Regency style properties. And that was his mark, and some of those are still about, and there are other builders that. So I think the character was always maintained by the type of structure, the type of windows, the type of doors that you could put on there. So that wasn't restrictive. It's only restricted if you have a listed property, and a grade two listed property. Grade one listed is a property that basically you can't really make any alterations without English Heritage being involved. It normally means that you have to even construct it by the type of materials that they had used. So let's say you had sash windows and they're wooden frames, then you can only replace it by sash windows and wooden frames. Now, you might not find that there are modern double glazed sash windows in wooden frames, but they can be constructed, of course, because they are constructed individually and they're not something that rolls off the factory floor. You'll find that they are going to be quite expensive to do. When you are grade two listed, then you've got the exterior to worry about and perhaps not so much the interior to worry about. And of course, any other grades are graded on the basis of perhaps conservation or the area of natural beauty or some sort of preservation order to try and keep the area in line with its culture and character that it had adopted. So those are the only things that will make you have some restrictions on the type of doors, windows and roofs. But majority of them are adjustable. And now, you know, recently I've been discussing with a client who's bought a grade two listed property, and there are, you know, sash windows with double glazing elements to it, created in a timber form, or even in a UPVC or wooden type of form that allows them to actually look and feel the same, but perhaps offer the peace and the quiet and sort of the security that one does need nowadays.
Final story of the week. There's been a 3% increase in the number of home owner mortgages in arrears, rising to 96,580 in quarter one 2024. That's according to UK Finance's latest arrears and possessions data. Cost of living pressures and higher interest rates continue to have a major impact, contributing to the rise. The number of buy-to-let properties in arrears remains the same as the previous quarter at 13,570, so no change there. Homeowners and buy-to-let properties in early arrears dipped by 2% and 11% respectively in that first quarter. The overall proportion of mortgages in arrears remains relatively low at 1.11% of home owner mortgages and 0.69% of buy-to-let mortgages. For comparison, the number of homeowner and buy-to-let mortgages in arrears in Q1 2009, the peak in arrears numbers during the global financial crisis was 209,600, almost twice the 110,000 seen in the first quarter of this year. So it's interesting that the data shows that possessions numbers remain very low compared to historic norms. A total of 1,470 homeowner and buy-to-let mortgage properties were possessed in the first quarter of this year, down 26% with Q1 2019 before the pandemic. So although the numbers have gone up 3%, what they're saying is in the last 5 years, the numbers are still lower than they were before the pandemic. And I wonder if that's down to the fact that actually we've got more of a sensitive culture from the mortgage companies, perhaps, Joe?
Yes, it's a combination of the sensitive culture from mortgage companies as well as the government's directive as to what they can and they can't do or they'd like to do. Because obviously there was a complete fear when 14 consecutive rates rise that they could have had a bit of a bloodbath in terms of the number of people that could have been repossessed, which would have meant there was a lot more homeless people, and that burden would have been put onto the government to find accommodation, and it just rolls on. It just goes on from there. So it may have been a directive. There's a couple of things that are also causing that slight delay, and that delay is also that courts are not caught up with the number of possessions that they need to deal with. And the process has been delayed by the government. And so there's a combination of keeping these numbers down. And it's right to do that. At the end of the day, the reality of it is this, that, you know, lenders will take actions because they feel that that's the right thing to do. They're often not at the losing end of this because you have to remember, unless they had actually lent 100% mortgage, people had had some stake in the game. They had some skin in the game. So they might have had a 70 or 85% borrowing. So they would have put 20, 25% of that money into that. So even if they were having to force sell it, they were probably going to get their money back or nearest damn it. The second part of it, of course, is that, you know, lenders do secure their lending based on an indemnity insurance policy that they take out. So even if there was a shortfall, they actually go and collect the difference from the insurance company. So they can afford to be a little bit longer in not doing it, not doing repossessions, and trying to be supportive and fair. But I understand there comes a point where you think, well, you know what, enough is enough. I can't do this. It's not a business model anymore. It doesn't work for us. It doesn't work for them. We need to get out of that situation. And so on a private borrowing, they're probably a little bit more leniency. On a buy to let, they're probably not, because it's more of a commercial, because it's not your main home. And any other form is obviously going to be challenging. So I think it's just been slowed down because of a number of reasons. And one of those, I believe, probably be a directive from the government to say, well, look, if you start to repossess every one of these things, apart from all the buy-to-lets that will go out, and we'll have people that are homeless in the rented properties, we're not going to be able to accommodate them. So, you know, you've got to put the brakes on this.
And that's where we must leave it for this week, Joe. That's all we have time for. Thanks as always. And thank you for watching Property Matters. We'll be back with another show very soon.